Welcome back to the deep dive. I was staring at my calendar this morning, just looking at that really specific, kind of awkward time we're in right now. We spend month, building up to Christmas. It's all red and green, reindeer, snow, the whole Santa thing. It's just intense. And then the second New Year's is over, it feels like the world just aggressively pivots to
It
pink.
is such a jarring shift. You go from Silent Night to Be My Valentine almost overnight. The whole aesthetic just flips.
It feels like two completely different universes, doesn't it? You've got the North Pole, elves, toy production, and then you have this Roman romance holiday, hearts, chocolates. But today we're looking at a stack of documents from the North Pole City Archives. And they claim these two worlds. They're not just neighbors on the calendar, they're like administratively linked.
Yeah, and not just by a date, but by a person. There's actual infrastructure there.
Right. So today we are deep diving into the profile of this entity named Adora. The files call her the Christmas Cupid, or more formally, the Ambassador of Love. And our mission really is to figure out how a Cupid ends up on Santa's payroll and why she might just be the most important logistical figure in the whole holiday canon.
It's a fascinating profile. It really challenges everything we think we know about this lore. We usually keep our mythology separate. Greek myths stay over here, Christian saints over there.
Shanna stays at the pole.
Exactly. But Adora just crashes all of those together.
She really does. So I want to start with her origin story because, I mean, when I opened the file, I expected to see, born in the elf village.
Right, parents were toy makers.
Exactly. That is not what is in here. It's way bigger.
Oh, it's ancient. If you look at the genealogy section of the archives, Adora's origin isn't just pre-Santa, it's pre-modern history. We're talking thousands of years ago. And the names on her birth certificate,
Been
basically,
heavy hitters.
the heaviest. We're talking about the goddess Aphrodite and Zeus, the king of the gods himself.
Okay, so let's just pause there because that was the first thing I really had to wrap my head around. We have the Greek pantheon directly involved in creating a citizen of North Pole City. That just feels like a genre clash. How does the text even explain that?
It's actually a pretty sophisticated bit of theological maneuvering. The archives say that Aphrodite, as the goddess of love, she manipulated the spirit of love directly, and she used the power of Zeus to bring Adora into existence. So from the jump, Adora is a deity class entity, an earthly deity-based Cupid.
So not an elf, not a fairy.
Correct. She's a divine creation. She totally predates our modern idea of Christmas. She's from the era of Mount Olympus.
Which just begs the question, how do you go from drinking nectar on Mount Olympus to freezing your wings off in the Arctic Circle? What's the bridge?
The bridge is the evolution of the holiday itself. The archives say that as Christmas came into play, as it grew into this huge spiritual and cultural force, Adora felt a pull. The text says she had an ever-growing love for the sainted season.
So she was just a fan. She just liked the vibe.
Pretty much, yeah. She resonated with the energy.
Yeah.
But she couldn't just, show up. The North Pole is sovereign territory in this lore. You need an invite, and that invite came from a very surprising partnership.
This is the historical alliance section. I highlighted this like three times. It sounds like fan fiction, but the archives treat it as actual history. Saint Valentine intervenes.
Yes. A few centuries ago, Saint Valentine forms a strategic alliance with Aphrodite.
Just stop and picture that, a Christian martyr and a Greek goddess shaking hands.
That sounds wild. But if you think about it, their portfolios overlap. They both govern the domain of love. It was basically a merger of departments.
Yeah.
So Valentine chose a small band of Cupids to represent this partnership, and Adora was one of them. And this is where her whole metaphysics, I guess, it
See, you
changes.
gotta upgrade.
She does. The text says she received angelic enchanted essences. This is the key to understanding who she is. She's not just a Greek myth anymore. She's a hybrid. She has the DNA of the pagan gods and the angelic essence of the Christian tradition.
Hybrid is the perfect word. She's a chimera of holidays. And the file mentions this illuminated induction. Let her do something really rare for a pagan creation. She got to visit heaven.
Briefly, yeah, which gives her a resume that's just unmatched. Experience in Olympus, experience in heaven and on earth.
It's no wonder Santa wanted her. I mean, you see that on a LinkedIn profile. You hire that person instantly.
Oh, immediately. By the 20th century, Adora has proven herself. Valentine and Aphrodite make her their official emissary to North Pole City. And Santa Claus, being the pragmatist he is, doesn't just accept her, he integrates her. He gives her permanent residence and the title Love Ambassador.
It makes you realize North Pole City isn't just a toy factory, it's a diplomatic hub. It's like the United Nations of folklore.
That's a great way to put it.
Yep.
And Adora is the delegate binding these two major powers, the spirit of Christmas and the spirit of Valentine's love.
And that binding isn't just theoretical, which is the part that really got me. There's an actual administrative procedure that happens every year to mark the transition. It's not just that a calendar page flips, they actually do something.
Right, the holiday bait and ritual.
And it happens on a specific day, Candlemas, February 2nd. Now, for anyone who isn't up on their liturgical calendar, Candlemas is a real holiday, right?
It is, yeah. Historically, it marks the presentation of Jesus at the temple. In a lot of older traditions, it was the true end of the Christmas season. People didn't take their decorations down on January 6th. They waited till February 2nd.
So the lore here is actually incredibly accurate to history.
It is. It's repurposing that old tradition.
Okay, so walk us through it. What actually happens on February 2nd in North Pole City?
It's described almost like a relay race. Santa Claus and Adora meet.
Mm-hmm.
And Santa is physically holding the holiday baton, which represents the, you know, the energy and authority of Christmas. He passes it to Adora.
A literal passing of the torch.
Exactly. And the moment that baton is in her hand, the spirit of Christmas officially steps back. It retires for the year. And the Valentine season is declared to be incomplete play.
I feel like this absolves so many people who feel guilty about leaving their lights up. You technically have until February 2nd before you're violating the North Pole Constitution.
According to this profile, yes. February 2nd is the hard cutoff. That's when she takes the wheel.
It's interesting to think of love as this seasonal shift. You know, Christmas love is one thing, charity, family, goodwill. And then Adora takes the baton and it shifts. It becomes romantic, love, passion, partnership. She's the custodian of that shift.
She makes sure the transition is smooth so we don't all get whiplash.
So we know who she is, this Greek angel North Pole hybrid, and we know her function. But I want to talk about her presence. If I'm walking down the street in the downtown district of North Pole City, what am I looking at? Because the files say she's a shapeshifter.
She is. And this is probably to help her navigate, you know, the different expectations people have. She has two main forms. First, there's the adult female form. The text notes she can appear with or without angelic wings in this state. This is probably her ambassador mode. Diplomatic, serious.
So she can look like a peer to Santa Claus.
Exactly. She can stand toe-to-toe with the big figures.
And then there's the form we all recognize.
The childlike cherub. Smaller, winged, flying around with what the archives call loving glee.
That's the Hallmark card version. The little baby with the bow and arrow.
Why do you think she uses that form? It seems so less authoritative.
I think it's about approachability. If you're trying to spark some romance, a giant angelic warrior might be a little intimidating. A cherub is disarming. It lowers your defenses.
That makes sense. And the source adds this really cool detail. She uses Cupid magic to alter her look, even within those forms. She's fluid. She changes to fit whoever she's talking to.
A very useful trait for a diplomat. And speaking of interactions, let's talk about her weaponry. Because you can't be a Cupid without a bow and arrow. But Adora isn't, you know, shooting to kill. The text uses a phrase I absolutely love. She is ready to soft-heartedly smite you.
It's a wonderful oxymoron, isn't it?
Yeah.
Soft-heartedly smite. She uses arrows of amity.
Amity as in friendship, peace.
Right. It's weaponized affection. She pierces you, but the result isn't a wound. It's just this sudden, overwhelming sense of friendship or love, like being injected with pure serotonin.
But honestly, the arrows aren't even the most powerful tool in her kit. If you look under abilities, there's something called the Hallowed Hug.
The Hallowed Hug? I think this is her most unique power.
I circled this in red. This is not just a polite embrace.
No. The mechanics of this are wild. The archives say that if Adora hugs you, that loving warmth doesn't just last for a moment. It stays with you for months.
Months.
Imagine that. You get a hug in December, and you are still feeling that physical sensation of warmth and comfort in April.
That is some serious high vibration energy. It's almost like a battery charge. You're just charging up the residents to get them through the dark winter.
That's a great theory. The North Pole is dark for half the year. Maybe Adora is a literal heat source, you know, emotionally.
And she doesn't just give this away for free. Adora is also part of the local economy. She's an entrepreneur.
This was the most grounding part of the profile for me. She runs a shop.
Adora's Love Shack.
Great name.
Located in the downtown district. And the inventory list is just fantastic. It's not toys.
No, it's a metaphysical pharmacy. She's selling love spells, potions, amulets, romantic advice.
It creates such a vivid picture of this city. You've got elves making wooden trains, and then next door, Adora is selling a potion brewed by a demigod.
It reinforces that she's an active part of the community. She's not just some figurehead who shows up once a year. She's there, day to day, helping citizens with their relationships. Because even elves have relationship drama, apparently.
Apparently so. If you need a love potion, you go to the lady who is literally made by Aphrodite. That's quality control right there.
You know the product is going to work.
But she does have a more formal, high-level role, too. We need to go from downtown to uptown because the architecture there gets really symbolic. This was the part where my brain had to stretch a little.
Oh, the dual-purpose building.
Mm-hmm.
This is the most intellectually stimulating part of the lore for me.
So on one side, she maintains St. Valentine's Holy Chapel of Love. Sounds pretty standard. A Christian chapel for the saint she represents.
Correct. She goes there daily, offers prayers to Valentine, to the Holy Lord. It's a very pious, traditional, religious place. But the building has a secret.
The twist.
The back of St. Valentine's Chapel is actually the front of the Love Temple of Aphrodite.
I'm trying to visualize this. Is it like a revolving door or two entrances to the same room?
The text implies it's the same structure, but depending on how you approach it, or maybe your belief system, it presents differently. It's one building serving two masters.
And Adora works both sides of the room.
She does. She's the minister for the chapel side and the high priestess for the temple side.
How is that even allowed? I mean, historically, mixing pagan temple worship and Christian chapel services is a huge no-no. That's usually where conflict starts, not where it ends.
The source material actually addresses that. It says, basically, since Aphrodite was blessed holy by St. Valentine, it's all good.
It's all good. That's the official ruling.
It points to a really unique theology they have up there, because Adora embodies the merger. The building embodies the merger. It proves that ancient traditions of love and the modern sainted traditions can coexist. It suggests that at the North Pole, intent matters more than dogma.
That's a really beautiful way to put it. And she has the authority to back it up. She's not just praying. She's officiating. She can perform marriages.
Yes, in St. Valentine's name. And there's this great detail. On rare occasions, St. Valentine himself will travel to the North Pole to officiate a wedding, and Adora and Aphrodite will assist him.
Can you imagine getting that wedding invitation? Officiated by a saint, assisted by a goddess.
It would be the social event of the season.
And on Valentine's Day itself, Adora is just sprinting. She gives a sermon at her chapel temple, and then she has to run over to St. Nicholas's Holy Cathedral, St. Tasmain Church, to give another sermon there.
She is the hardest working woman in the holiday business.
But, and this is where the tone of the file shifts dramatically. It's not all weddings and potions. We've talked about the diplomat, the shopkeeper, the priestess. But there is a fourth role, the action hero.
This is where that ambassador title gets gritty. Usually ambassadors have diplomatic immunity, but Adora deals with foreign relations that are actively hostile.
The text says she's sent out to various secret supernatural communities, and it explicitly says she puts herself in danger.
Right. The North Pole isn't a bubble. It exists in a world where there are opposing forces,
yeah.
And Adora's on the front lines. The archives list her enemies, and it's a real rogues gallery. She fights anti-Cupids.
I had never heard the term anti-Cupid before this. What does an anti-Cupid even do?
It makes a kind of dualistic sense, right? If there are agents of love, there must be agents of anti-love. Agents of heartbreak or cynicism or apathy.
So they're shooting arrows that make you break up with people.
Or arrows that make you just give up on connection entirely, which is a terrifying concept.
And she also fights dark deities and demons, entities that are literally trying to destroy the concept of love.
It just totally changes how you see her character. When you see that cute little cherub on a Valentine's card, you don't think warrior. But according to this, she's out there battling demons.
She has the lineage of Zeus, remember? She might carry a harp, but she's got the combat instincts of a Greek god. She's fighting to protect the innocent and to make sure love survives the winter.
It gives a whole new weight to Valentine's Day. It's not just about buying chocolates. It's a victory lap. It means Adora won her fights for another year.
Exactly. It frames the holiday as a triumph of light over darkness.
And amidst all that fighting, the file says she has a favorite duty.
Locating soulmates.
Which is the ultimate goal, right?
Yeah.
Bringing people together, specifically on Valentine's Day and Christmas.
It brings her full circle. She connects the dates, she connects the deities, and she connects the people.
It's a whole ecosystem of love.
So let's zoom out. We've gone through the source material. We've seen the origins, the powers, the double-sided temple, the battles she fights. What's the big takeaway? Why does Adora matter?
For me, Adora represents the idea that traditions aren't static. They evolve. We think of Christmas and Valentine's Day as these rigid, separate things. But Adora proves they're fluid. You can have the magic of ancient myths and the sanctity of modern holidays all in one package. She's the glue holding the winter season together.
Without her, the transition would be messy. We'd be stuck in this weird post-Christmas limbo. She provides the rhythm.
She drives the bus from December to February.
Now, before we wrap up, I have a practical question for our listeners. If one of them manages to get an invite to North Pole City, hypothetically speaking, what is the one thing they need to do?
Based on this file, do not leave without the hug.
The hallowed hug.
Forget the souvenirs. Forget the photos. You want that loving warmth that lasts for months. That is the most valuable thing she offers.
Although, looking at her schedule, between the shop, the sermons, and fighting anti-Cupids, you might have a hard time pinning her down.
True. If she's holding a sword, maybe come back later.
Good travel advice. But, you know, this whole deep dive has left me with a lingering thought. We've established Adora is the ambassador bridging Christmas and Valentine's Day. She connects the pagan to the holy.
Right.
If that structure exists for this specific transition, well, logic dictates she can't be the only one.
That is a provocative thought.
I mean, who bridges the gap between the sugary love of Valentine's Day and, say, the chaotic energy of Easter? Or between the spookiness of Halloween and the holiness of Christmas?
The archives do mention an Easter city and a Halloween capital. It stands to reason there must be diplomats traveling between them.
I'm picturing an Easter bunny gargoyle hybrid.
Or turkey with a Santa hat. The possibilities are endless.
It suggests a much larger, interconnected universe of holidays that we're only just scratching the surface of.
Adora is likely just the first precedent we've found.
Well, something to think about next time you see a Valentine's display going up in a store aisle that still has Christmas tinsel on the floor. Someone is managing that transition, and she's probably tired.
And she's probably armed.
Thanks for diving deep with us today into the archives of North Pole City.
Always a pleasure.
Stay curious, and we'll catch you on the next one.